Another crackdown from the feds on deplorable living conditions at a notorious Jacksonville public housing complex. We'll tell you the latest just ahead. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show's always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show now video on demand at our partners TVJax.com and MetroJacksonville.com. And just ahead, we'll take your calls on the latest at the Eureka Garden Apartments. Yes, in the news again. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Also this morning, honoring the arts icons of the First Coast. Plus, March is the month to help local seniors who are hungry. We'll tell you about the March for Meals. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, federal housing officials are ordering the owners of Jacksonville's troubled Eureka Garden housing complex to either fix the problems there or sell the property. Everything from roaches to potholes to rust to dangerous mold in the units has plagued the tenants there for years. Community activist Denise Hunt has been working for some time now to raise awareness about the problems at Eureka Garden, and she joins us now with her thoughts on this latest news. Denise, good to see you.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here. Well, actually, my heart is heavy to be back here talking about the same old persistent inequalities and disparities over in the Eureka Gardens.
Right, but I'm curious to get your thoughts about this, and we want your calls. Give us a call now at 549-2937, that's 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. And so a top HUD official has ordered the Reverend Richard Hamlet and his Global Ministries Foundation to fix these problems at Eureka Garden and some of his other apartments down in Orlando or sell them. It is just astounding that we are still talking about this after so much publicity and outrage, Denise. What's your reaction?
Well, my reaction is one of I'm outraged too. I'm disgusted. That's mine. Particularly because I went out there and had a very in-depth conversation with Reverend Hamlet, and he assured me that he was going to be persistent in getting some of those problems solved. And I offered a plan of action as well as, because I'm a registered nurse, a case management plan of action to help solve some of the inequities out there. And he seemed interested. So I feel like I just got really snowballed after reading what was in the paper and the just the things that were not done and the Band-Aid measures that have been done out there. I'm just disgusted.
And when you say Band-Aid measures, let's describe what it's like out there and what's been done and what still needs to
be done. Well, I mean, Tracy Grant, I think she's the president of the Tenants Association. She was in the paper. And, a picture says 1,000 words. Her walls have been torn out. They're going out there. They're doing, some fix-ups, but they're not dealing with the mold, the persistent mold, the persistent roaches, the persistent health hazards in terms of the stairs and a lot of the issues that we first found out there. Some of the apartments have been taken care of, but not all. And it's been a very slow pace, and I feel like they could have done better, and he can do better. And mm-hmm. He's been given adequate time, and it's just horrible. It's ridiculous.
So what is it like when you talk to the tenants and they tell you what they're dealing with?
Well, I've talked to a number of them on the phone. I haven't been out there like I want to be because I've had other things that's going on in the city that I've been focusing on. But I'm very in contact with a lot of the people because they know who I am. And they're just disgusted, too. You know, they're scared. They're still concerned about the health issues with their children in terms of the mold. There was some issues in terms of lead in the water. And, with the Flint, Michigan issues, that's hitting hard right here in Jacksonville.
Absolutely.
It's got a lot of people scared. And basically, they just living with the same old, I think the last time when the mayor was out there, a lot of people got their hopes up. A lot of people thought they were going to be moving, thought things were going to just get speedily done. And to come all this time and it's not being done and you're still coming home to the same persistent problems, plumbing issues, etc., it's really heartbreaking. The children got to live with the, you know, you tell your children it's going to get fixed. It's not getting mm-hmm. fixed. So it's a lot of heartbreak.
And do you have confidence that HUD will evict, I guess, the owner of this complex and put in an owner that can do a better job?
Well, I don't have a lot of confidence in HUD. They represent, to me at this point, the status quo, the establishment. They've been out there before. The only reason why the last inspections that they allowed that building to go through, I feel like they recanted it once people like me came out and put a lot of pressure on them. Because, you know, at first they let it go through. And they said that it was done right. Then we come back and found out none of it had been done. So I don't have a lot of, a lot of faith, a confidence in HUD and their ability to make a competent decision. I think Reverend Hamlet has a lot of money, a lot of access to money, and I think he's been able to sidestep a lot of things.
And we want your calls as HUD orders the owner of the troubled Eureka Garden Complex in Jacksonville, also the Washington Heights units, to clean up or sell. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. Let's begin with Tom on the west side. Hi, Tom. You're on the air. Good morning.
Ah, yes. Good morning to you, too. I was just wondering, The building has degenerated to the point, buildings have degenerated to the point where they've become a public nuisance and cost the city probably millions of dollars at this point. If the city just could not declare eminent domain and take over and prevent this slumlord from profiting any further from his ownership of the property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you, Tom. Since it's a federally managed, or there's federal oversight, is that even possible?
I'm not sure about the legalities of all of that. I know I've talked to Councilman Garrett Dennis. The first time he told me that Reverend Hamlet did not have the funds to do most of the work, and they were aware of that. So I'm sure that they have looked into all of that. Is it possible? I don't think so because it is federal. So, but I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know all of that.
I mean, the city officials and the mayor's office have done, I think, everything they can do within the limits of their authority.
Well, I'm excited about what Lenny Curry has done. I mean, he's done what he can do. I've seen him personally with feet on the ground. I've seen the fire for doing something. I think he's put pressure on a lot of people to do. I feel like he's done, at this point, all that he can do. Maybe he can do the eminent domain, but at this point, those people still got to find a place to stay. Yeah. And I give him credit where credit is due.
Dale is in Avondale. Hi, Dale. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think I'm just echoing a little bit the sentiments of the last caller in regards to, you know, well, first of all, let me say this. I own a business here in Jacksonville. I have to deal with code enforcement and parking and various other city entities. And I know this is on a local level and HUD is on a federal level, but I would think that they would be held to a higher standard. There's already been mismanagement as far as the actual inspections were concerned.
Mm-hmm.
As a taxpayer in this city, how much more of this do we have to see?
Yeah.
They are already aware that he owns the other complexes here. He's had problems within his other properties, which I understand span several states.
That is correct,
However, according to the news outlets here, he just bought a multiple million-dollar home where he lives. I'm a taxpayer. The taxes that I pay, both local and federal, go into programs such as this. It is an atrocity to hear that we are still dealing with this, and this man receives government subsidies every year mm-hmm. for these complexes.
Yeah, thanks, Dale.
How is it that are we still dealing with the
okay.
$500 toilets?
Right? Got it. Thank you, Dale. That's Dale in Avondale. He's right, Denise. Taxpayers paid Global Ministries more than $6 million as recently as 2014 to subsidize rent at Eureka Garden and Washington Heights Apartments in Jacksonville. The nonprofit owns more than $450 million in assets, thousands of apartment units across the country. They bought them with tax-free low-interest bonds. This, according to the Florida Times Union. Your reaction?
Well, my reaction is it's just a big scam. I really feel like he has the money to do it. You know, I'm going to tell it like I feel it. When I talk to him, you know, his thing is he's got a division of assets that's not really in his name and all of that kind of stuff. But like I told him, I said, listen, you either going to pay up or eventually they're going to find some kind of IRS to come in and you're going to go to jail.
Tina
and I really
in
feel like that's where he's headed.
And let's go now to Tina in Jacksonville. Go ahead, Tina. Hi, Tina. Are you there? All right. Give us a call back. Carol on the West Side. Carol, good morning. Carol, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I think that the owners ought to have to live. I'm here.
Yeah, you think they ought to have to live in these units?
Yes, I think they ought to be made by the courts to live in those units and understand. Yes.
All right, thanks for that. Denise Hunt, I think you've said the same thing.
Yeah, I actually said that to him. That's funny she
And what was his reaction, Reverend Hamlin?
Well, he's a Christian man, and he recognizes it, and he would live in there if he had to, and he wants to fix it up. So it's just a bunch of, yeah, I actually said that to him.
All right. I think we have Tina back. Tina in Jacksonville. Tina, are you there? Good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Lake. My first question is, do we know the condition of the property when Global Ministries took ownership, is my first question.
Uh-huh.
And then my second question is, what are the parameters for maintaining federally owned property, maintaining the property and making sure that the inspections are done, you know, in a timely fashion so that the units don't get so deplorable to the conditions that they are now. And then my other question kind of speaks more to the mold remediation. Is there a report finding on, you know, what exactly, what is the level of the mold presence within the units and what's the ratio between the number of units and the actual units that have a mold?
Yeah, thanks,
problem.
Tina. Thanks for those questions. Denise?
Well, I'm not sure of the level of how many that are the ratio. But I can tell you this, when we first went in, I would say a high percentage of them. I'd say probably about 80 or 90% of them had the mold. And now I'm not sure, some of it has been reduced, but not enough.
And to her other point, these problems existed before this company bought the complex.
Correct. That's
it's
true.
It's been a problem. I mean,
that's
these
true.
Units need a total overhaul.
They do. They do. And basically, like I told him, I've owned an apartment building, so I know what the federal, how HUD works. They have state inspections times, and there are certain upkeeps that has to be done in terms of the plumbing, the lighting, et cetera. And these things hadn't been done, but they hadn't been done before he got there. But then again, he was given sufficient time that some of that could have been done. And when you consider the amount of money that he's had to do it, I mean, I feel like it could have been done in a more timely manner.
Lots of calls. Daniel's in Jacksonville. Hi, Daniel. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I used to work for a former vendor to the Housing Authority, and we've made recommendations before on how to properly do maintenance and how to take care of the properties that were blatantly disregarded, and they had just gone and done the minimum. And I just wanted to, you know, get a comment on that, why the supervisors say that doing just the bare minimum would think is going to help their problems.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you go out there, and I wish you would go and see, at one point he was just putting tape underneath the stairs. I mean, you could see where he was taking this black tape and just wrapping the stairs up. And we knew the stairs had the rust and were coming apart. And some places the pillars were just falling from the rafters, you know, weren't even attached. And he was just going out there doing certain, like I say, Band-Aid cover-ups. anything to avoid actually doing the work. And it's just, it's awful. I mean, and he's been doing that throughout some of the buildings. I mean, has he done a lot of work? Sure, yes. But has he done enough to qualify to meet the HUD standards that I feel like should have been done? And what HUD says that should have been done, it was not.
Let's go to one more call. It's Lewis on the north side. Lewis, good morning.
Good morning. I think the issue is we should remove the option from this owner. If we litigate without concession and remove it, he's had ample opportunity to make the correction. There can't be any opportunity for settlement because he will always settle just enough for to buy more time. And you have to litigate without concession. Transparency is the only way to deal with it.
Thanks, Lewis. Your final thoughts, Denise Hunt.
Well, like I said, I'm going to maintain as a registered nurse that this is a health hazard. I'm going to say that. It's a respiratory hazard, and lead is has been shown to cause birth defects. So has respiratory problems coming from mold. I'm concerned about that. That's been my number one concern is those children out there. And I think that they need to address the issue now and fix it. And I'm tired of the Band-Aids. I'm tired of just keep being tired of going out there over and over and the persistent inequalities and inequities. It's wrong.
We appreciate your thoughts, as always, and we'll continue to follow this. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure being here.
Community activist Denise Hunt on the program this morning. Much more still ahead later, how you can help hungry seniors this month in our area. But up next, honoring the arts icons of the First Coast. Back in a moment.
I'm Gail Sturman, and proud to be a member of WJCT's Board of Trustees. Can we shorten WJCT's spring fundraiser? Let's find out. It's time to give now. When we get to our goal of $80,000, the fundraiser ends. If this station is as important to you as it is to me, please join us. Donate now at WJCT.org.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
WJCT and Baptist Health are pleased to announce that Amy Robach, news anchor of ABC's Good Morning America, will be this year's afternoon keynote speaker at Girls' Day Out, September 17, 2016, Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Amy is also a breast cancer awareness advocate and author of My Breast Cancer Journey, From Fighter to Thriver. For more information or for tickets, log on to wjct.org/girlsdayout.
Yeah, it's okay. Welcome back. Well, the Cultural Council's 40th Annual Arts Awards are coming up soon. Boundless, Jacksonville's premier arts and culture gala, will be held out at TPC Sawgrass and will feature 40 of the city's true icons who've demonstrated continuous support of arts and culture in our area. Here with a preview, Tony Allegretti and Ryan Ali of the Cultural Council. Good morning.
Morning.
And legendary local philanthropist and Great Lady of Jacksonville, Mrs. Helen Lane. So good to see you.
So good to see you.
And it's your chance to connect with Helen Lane right now at 549-2937. And, you know, I've been wanting to have you as a guest on this program for a lot of years. So thanks for coming on and doing the show today.
Well, I gave in finally.
You did. You finally gave in. And it's because of your support of the arts, isn't it?
Because I believe in the subject so much.
Yeah, and you've long supported arts and culture and had given such great philanthropic support over the years.
Well, I'm so glad so many have supported it, and it gets better all the time.
That's right, and this 40th anniversary, Tony, is really significant. Tell us what's going to be happening.
Well, so we're just excited. Every year, you know, the Arts Awards are an annual event that help the Cultural Council raise funds, and those private dollars go to artist workshops, artist professional development, and direct grants to artists. And so it's hugely important for us, and we always celebrate leaders in arts and culture. And because this was the 40th anniversary, we wanted to do something really special and identify folks that have really led in arts and culture. And 40 really doesn't do it justice. There's obviously that we're the 12th largest city in the country, and we have a thriving arts and culture scene. We did our best to try to pick folks and recognize folks that have given so much.
And it's 549-2937 to talk to the Cultural Council and Mrs. Helen Lane about the upcoming Arts Awards. Helen is one of the honorees, Ryan Ali, and so are some other familiar names to listeners of this program, like our own WJCT and NPR host Al Letson, and many other well-known names around town. Was it difficult to narrow it down to this list?
Well, as Tony mentioned, the process was very inorganic. It was a struggle, actually. You know, this list could have easily been 80 to 100 people. When you're celebrating 40 people and really honoring them in this kind of way, it was really transformative.
Yeah, we looked to some experts that do this kind of recognition, these kind of awards, and got some best practices. And again, it's super difficult. I'm thankful that there's a 50th anniversary right around the corner, so we can make sure that we make good on folks that we missed.
Now, Helen Lane, this is just the latest honor for you. You will be honored. About 10 years ago, you received a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Florida Times Union's annual EVE Awards luncheon, and it really was so deserving. Over the years, you've lent your name to so many worthy causes in this community. It's really a remarkable legacy.
Well, thank you so much. I was overcome with that award. I didn't know, I couldn't believe I had received it, but I do believe there are just so many wonderful organizations devoted to the arts in Jacksonville. Yeah. And I think that people more and more are attending the museums, and I think we're just becoming a real art center.
How have you seen it change over the years when you think back to how it used to be as opposed to the kind of scene that we see today?
I think more art and more people, and the interest is there.
You think the interest has grown over the years?
Yes, I do indeed think it has, because there's more of it. And more, I think there's more. It just is in the atmosphere now. We're very proud of our museums. And
you've watched it over the years, and I have to surprise you a little bit. On the website oldortega.com, there is an incredible photo gallery that everyone should go take a look at. It's an homage to you, Helen Lane. Have you seen it?
No.
It is.
Where is it?
I'll show you right now.
Where is it?
If you go to this website, aquilaarts.com, there's an homage to you with some unbelievable photos of you.
Oh.
And here, I'll scroll through so you can. Here's a picture of you as a debutante at the Florida Yacht Club. There is a picture of you, your wedding photo.
I remember that.
There's a picture of you in, it looks like a Thunderbird convertible or something with your husband, Ed.
I think we borrowed the car for the photograph.
Yeah, that is just an incredible photo. Just amazing photos of you. And they give folks, here's a picture of you on the cover of League Looks. It's a junior league magazine, you and some other models. It gives folks an idea of just your history.
Goodness.
And your
Did you get all those?
Oh, they're all on this website.
My son.
There's your son Charlie
in his
at the beach.
Suit, yes.
Yeah, he's definitely in his birthday suit at the beach, and just some great photos that show your presence in this community.
I never saw all those.
We'll have to show you that, Helen.
Yeah, and so it's exciting to have Helen on the show, but Tony and Ryan, it gives you a sense of just the really prominent community leaders that are supporting your work on the Cultural Council.
Absolutely. That's and the leadership really started with Helen. She's a founder of the Cultural Council. Ryan and I wouldn't be sitting here without her work.
Well, I'm glad to be here, but it was also Ann Baker.
Yeah.
Really,
Jackie Holmes.
Yeah, it's really outstanding, the forethought that those three ladies had. And I will tell you that our cultural infrastructure is as strong as most in this country, probably more so. And it's really that early foundation that really helped.
And we're getting tweets for you, Helen Lane. By the way, the number to call in and connect with this group is 549-2937. Here's a tweet from a listener. Helen Lane is a treasure to Jacksonville and a sweet briar vixen for life. Ask her about the hashtag saving sweet briar. That's where you went to school, right?
That is where I went to college.
Yeah.
And so it's one of the most beautiful places in the world.
And I guess there's
very happy I went there.
They're trying to do a fundraiser, I guess, to save the college.
They always,
yeah.
Oh, it's saved. It's saved. It's in the right direction. They have 15,000 applicants. I mean, they're doing well.
Oh, that's good.
We had wrong leadership, but now we've got excellent leadership, and everybody's optimistic.
Here's another tweet. Helen Lane is an alumnus of the Bartram School, now part of Bowles. Women's education creates leaders.
I think Bartram does do that for anyone who goes there. They teach you to contribute to the community and do the best you can in all ways. It was a pretty taut ship, Bartram.
Yeah.
But I think Jacksonville was lucky to have it. Fortunate to have two maiden ladies from New England come down and start a school. And it really was an outstanding one. I think it's as good as the prep schools in the Northeast. I feel we're all lucky to have it here.
We're so lucky to have a lot of institutions here and prominent citizens. I think we take for granted often citizens like Helen Lane and others who could live anywhere, but they choose to live here and make these incredible contributions.
Yes.
Ryan. And
a lot of the reason why people actually come back to Jacksonville, too. But, you know, Helen has been incredible with us at the Cultural Council. Anything that we do, she literally is always surprised and thrilled with the amount of advancement that we've done. You know, when she originally set out, when you set out 44 years ago to create the Cultural Council, has it surpassed your expectation?
Indeed, it has. And Fran Kinney was so helpful.
Oh, absolutely.
I had to add her. We really did research. It's the three of us, Jackie and Ann and I. We worked about a year. We went to see every businessman, and we went to every organization, and really felt that it was a needed thing and that people would be behind it.
Let's go to your calls now at 549-2937. Denise in Palatka. Go ahead, Denise.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call, and it's a pleasure to hear Helen Lane's voice. I'm a fellow artist. I paint realism in oil, and I'm about a mile and a half from the St. John's River, and I paint endangered species and endangered wetlands. How one get into the arts supports?
That's a good question.
Well, that's teed up, I think, for the Cultural Council. You know, our website's culturalcouncil.org, but I think more importantly, you're a visual artist. Look through our CSGs. Those are our cultural service grants, grantees. There's 23 orgs right now. That'll probably grow because our sector is growing, but there's some great museums and arts nonprofits that we support. We're just a sort of a quasi-governmental re-grantor and supporter of artists, but there's multiple dozens of orgs that you can get behind and work with.
I would say if you could join the Cummer and join the Jacksonville Art Museum, join the museums, and you'll get brochures from them, and it'll be a delightful experience for you.
And of course, you've, as Tony and Ryan pointed out, you were one of the people that started the Cultural Council in Jacksonville. You also, I think, along with Wayne Wood, basically started the historic preservation movement in this city. Isn't that right?
No, I followed Wayne Wood. I mean, Wayne Wood was it. He was it. We all joined. Whatever we did along with Wayne behind him.
I think you don't give yourself
enough credit,
though.
But I was in on thinking it was a very good idea.
And so many other incredible efforts that you have been a part of over the years. By the way, I did not know this, but you climbed the Matterhorn back in the 70s. Is that right?
We did.
And you were the only woman in the party? Is that also
right? I had the best time. I talk about the night I spent with 33 men. and it wasn't very romantic or glamorous because everybody was in boots and had pickaxes and things like that to get up the Matterhorn.
Oh, my gosh.
Not really pickaxes, but ropes and boots.
And, that's amazing. But it was you need fun. A longer that show. Was a,
I know.
Or a different show.
I have made several talks about that Matterhorn. It was an experience.
Excellent.
I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I don't have to do it again.
Oh, my goodness.
I said it's as pretty looking at it from the bottom as it is looking down from the top. Right. You don't need to go to the top.
So this is just a very short window into just an incredible lady in so many ways. We had hoped to have another incredible woman on the show today, Betsy Lovett, to join you. Maybe she'll come another time, though.
Yeah, she said it was too early.
Yeah.
Make it at 2 o'clock. She'll be glad to come.
Oh, it is too early. I don't want to get up this early either, quite frankly.
I agree.
You know what? The Arts Awards are, of course, an evening affair. Let's talk a little bit more about that and how people can buy their tickets.
Yeah, so Saturday, May 7th, we're super excited. TPC Sawgrass, that was a real gift to us. You know, the cost of these nonprofit events can run sky high, and we were so thrilled that Matt and his team really gifted that venue to us. So it's saving us a lot of money that we can ultimately re-grant for artist development and, you know, things that we need to run the Cultural Council. The evening starts off at 6 o'clock. Cultural Council founder Helen Lane and arts advocate Joni Newton are hosting our VIP reception. And at that particular time, we'll unveil the 40 icons. We've partnered with Renee Parento and have been on this voyage for about a month shooting all of these fabulous people, and we're super thrilled to unveil that at the event. 7 o'clock, join us for dinner, dancing. It's going to be one of those events that people will talk about for years and years to come. It's going to rival that of any larger city.
Yeah,
Tony.
Absolutely, and I just want to really thank everyone out there. Regions is our title sponsor, and we have a tremendous, a long list of sponsors, and they've given in a way that we haven't seen before. I mean, this Arts Awards is already the most successful that we've ever had, and we haven't sold out yet, which we hope to do.
Yeah.
And so we're really excited about the resources that we'll have to help local artists and our art and culture scene.
Get your tickets now for the Cultural Council's 40th Annual Arts Awards Boundless, and the tickets can be purchased at culturalcouncil.org/Boundless. It's going to be quite an evening, and it's such a pleasure to have you all three here this morning. Helen Lane, Tony Allegretti, and Ryan Ali, thanks so much for being with us. Great to have you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And we'll
totally
be
enjoyable.
Yes, it was great. And we'll be right back.
It was.
Join WJCT for a special sneak preview of Ken Burns' Jackie Robinson documentary, Sunday, April 3rd, in the Virginia Room in the Ringhaver Student Center of Flagler College. The film depicts the life and accomplishments of baseball legend and civil rights pioneer Jack Roosevelt Robinson, who fearlessly crossed baseball's color line and continued fighting discrimination after his baseball career ended. Reception begins at 3 with screening and discussion to follow. This event is free, but registration is required. Info at wjct.org/events.
Discover country music that's out of the ordinary every week on Country Crossroads. Wednesday nights from 11 to 1, only on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT TV and radio. Submit now through April 30th. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Welcome back. Well, picture this, a brand new app that will empower you, the everyday American, to support issues you care about. This app is up and running, and it was created by some bright local entrepreneurs. Chris Markle is a social entrepreneur in residence at Florida State's Center for Undergraduate Research and Academic Engagement. And Chris is a co-founder of what's known as the Advocate Pack app. And it's good to talk to you, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you doing?
Great, thanks. So this is a crowd-based, evidence-based mobile app, and it's basically the way for average Americans who don't have their own personal lobbyist to get a little leverage over issues they care about. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, what we see is that people feel they're frustrated about issues. They feel like they can't have an impact, and they feel like unless they're a billionaire, there's nothing they can do. And what we can see is actually people's frustrations are reaching a level where it's almost dangerous in the U.S. I mean, you can see at protests, et cetera, that's reaching a boiling point. And what we're trying to do with Advocate is just leverage technology to make it easy for everyday citizens from around the U.S. to influence state and local ballot measures.
Right. It does help people who feel so powerless to have a voice in the process get involved. How does the app work?
Yeah, so I would say that there's two things. The app is just one component of what we're building. The app is a technology where you can you register and you link your credit cards and you select your issues, such as reducing gun violence, legalize marijuana, promote K-12 education. And after you link your cards, basically every time you make a purchase, that purchase is rounded up to the next dollar with your spare change directed towards the issues you care about. And so the idea is that you can actually donate to these issues a very small amount without thinking about it. What happens after that is that we look through all the data, all the ballot measures. We're focusing on state and local ballot measures about relative to the issues you care about. And we find the closest race and the race that is the most effective from a policy perspective. And we put the money towards that ballot measure, influencing that ballot measure. Afterward, we let you know what your impact is. If you donated $20, it could be that we created this specific ad that reached X amount of thousand people. And basically what we're trying to do is just make it easy for people who don't have a voice to influence these elections. Something that's really interesting outside the app is that we've noticed that the technology, people care less about the technology, but people care about joining our movement. We've actually been most successful in building an army of volunteers from across the country to help make all the decisions for our super PAC. So something this has kind of quickly evolved into is a volunteer-led super PAC where people have been actually able to choose issues they're passionate about, develop teams, and rally money towards those causes themselves. And it's kind of like this interesting shift where just people want to not just make calls or go to a talk, but they really want to like use their professional skills to influence elections. And we're trying to provide them an avenue to do that through Advocate.
And you and your co-founders have very personal reasons for coming up with this. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I wish Joe could be on the phone, but it's just crazy time here at FSU. Both of his parents died somewhat needlessly, and his brother committed suicide from opiate addiction. And these are things he talks about. And policy changes could have prevented the death of his family members. Like we know, if medical marijuana is available, we know opiate related deaths are reduced by 25%. I mean, we're talking about saving thousands of people. For me, you know, my significant other, I'm getting married in a week, actually, and my significant other, she deals with chronic pain. She's 28. She's rides horses professionally and deals with chronic pain. And she's a rock star and still works out multiple hours every day. But it's easy to see that medical marijuana is a treatment that is scientifically proven to be effective with minimal side effects, meaning like serious side effects from opiates. I mean, she's fortunate that she's not addicted in this way, in any way, but many people become addicted to opiates. And they either commit suicide or their lives go downhill. And, you know, we can seriously help people. Millions of Americans are suffering. We're aware of this. People are frustrated. And it's time that we leverage technology to empower normal people, everyday Americans, to improve the lives of everyday Americans. And I think we're going to see more apps like Advocate develop. And I think we're going to see a greater push towards ballot measures in the future that we can sidestep the gridlock of Congress or the legislative process to enact laws that improve the lives of our neighbors and our family members.
Now, the Advocate Pack app is available at Google Play and the Apple App Store. Are you able to track which issues and causes people who've downloaded it seem to be flocking to the most?
Oh, gun violence, medical marijuana, those are the main ones. Public transportation has been pretty interesting. We're adding we didn't add a women's rights at first just because we couldn't identify ballot measures specific for that issue. But a group of students were really passionate about it, and they formed a team of about 20 volunteers. I'm unsure if it's in the app right now, but that's like where a lot of our efforts going as well. I mean, we're over 50 volunteers just by word of mouth, just by like organic growth. We're hoping to hit 100 volunteers by the end of the school year, which would be this month. And then in the summer, really make a public push. But the idea really is that we'll do all the federal paperwork that's required and make sure all the regulations are met. We'll build the technology platform. We just want to empower people who are interested in issues to take hold of it and build what they want, create the impact that they want. We just give them a platform to do that. And it's been amazing, the reaction, the different interests that people are gravitating towards.
Fascinating to speak with you. The app is called Advocate Pack, and it is available. Download it. Chris Markle, co-founder over at Florida State, dialing in this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Of course, Melissa. Have a good day.
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jessica Evans, a proud board member of WJCT. It's time to give. When you donate now to WJCT, you are supporting all of your favorite public radio programming, and you're also helping us shorten our pledge drive. Our promise to you is that we'll end this fundraiser as soon as we hit our $80,000 goal. Plus, the earlier you give, the better your chances of winning in our prize drawings. Learn more by visiting WJCT.org or by calling 904-353-9528.
It's hard to be in two places at once, but our reporters are in hundreds of places right now.
For The World, I'm Laura Lynch in Accra.
I'm Matthew Bell in the Golan Heights.
I'm Mary Kay Magstad in Beijing.
I'm Marco Werman. PRI's The World brings you a global perspective on the news with a worldwide network of correspondents.
In Paris.
Morocco.
Cairo.
In Mexico City.
Join us here at The World. Weekday afternoons at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, the month of March is the month to march for meals. That's where hundreds of local Meals on Wheels programs nationwide reach out to deliver nutritious meals, friendly visits, and safety checks to America's seniors. Now, they do this all year long, but this month, if you support Aging True's Meals on Wheels program, you can be part of a special effort to make sure that seniors in our area are living healthy and independent lives in their homes. Treya Robinson is executive director, director of development, rather, for Aging True and joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
And, you know, when my grandparents were still alive, they used Meals on Wheels, and it's such a vital service. This is so important.
It really and truly is. And we always say, you know, most people think Meals on Wheels, you're stopping by, you're dropping off a meal, and someone is going to be able to eat today. But in addition to that, it's also a safety check. It gives us an opportunity to visit with seniors who many days don't see anyone's face except for maybe the volunteer or the driver that's delivering their meals.
Absolutely. That personal contact is so important. More than 15 million seniors are isolated in this country. Many more have difficulty paying for basic needs. About 10 million seniors in this country face the threat of hunger. One in six seniors going hungry. And so how can people be part of this effort, the March for Meals?
Yes, I know we are kind of the tail end of the month of March, but this is still an opportunity for individuals to get involved. They can contact Aging True directly at 904-807-1320, which is my office, or they can visit us online at www.agingtrue.org. There's information there to get involved in what we are calling our ride along program. And it's an opportunity for individuals to come and spend half of the morning with us delivering meals and getting the opportunity to see the faces of our seniors and the difference that they make by delivering meals to them.
I'm going to be taking part in a ride along next month. You've had the Jaguars' Brian Anger do a ride along.
Yes.
Is that right?
We've had Brian Anger. We've also had Josh Scobie. We had Henny Stewart from the chat join us. It's been a wonderful program because it gives individuals in the community an opportunity to see firsthand Meals on Wheels in action.
Because people have an idea of what it is, but you really have to go out on some of these rides to get the sense of what a difference it makes.
You definitely have to do it and experience it for yourselves to see hands-on, to have the opportunity to interact with our wonderful clients. We have clients who are 102 years old and as sharp and as spunky, and it just puts a smile on your face. It's very rewarding for the volunteer as well.
Aging True, in addition to doing this service, you do a lot for seniors in this community.
Oh, yes. That is Meals on Wheels is just one of the many programs that we operate. We also provide in-home services, personal care services. We also have an accredited home health agency as well. We do mental health, self-directed care, and daily money management. So we provide a host of services to seniors to help them remain independent and in their home for as long as possible.
So the website is agingtrue.org, easy to find online, and you can go there and sign up to be part of this ride-along program for Meals on Wheels, the March for Meals. But of course, they do that all through the year. Florida's senior population is over 4 million, about 22% of the total population. We're known for Florida, you know, for being a place for seniors. And even though Jacksonville is a younger city than most Florida cities, it's we don't want to neglect our seniors.
We definitely don't. They are a hidden population. Many people don't see them because they remain in their homes. Not many are as mobile. We do have our active senior population. But for us, it's about addressing the needs of the seniors who aren't as mobile, who need our assistance to help them stay in their homes and to reduce the likelihood of them being admitted into an assisted living facility and or nursing home.
So go to agingtrue.org and support Meals on Wheels in Jacksonville. It's through Aging True, providing home-based senior independence in Northeast Florida since 1962.
Yes, over 50 years.
Wow.
We are truly a jewel to the community and to the seniors especially.
Treya Robinson joining us this morning, and thank you so much for being part of this. I look forward to this ride-along in a few weeks.
We are very excited to have you, and thank you for having me this morning.
Well, that is our program today. Thanks so much for tuning in, and thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. Michelle Corum is running the board for us today. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchuk. Never miss a show. Make sure to subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Watch the show, too, video on demand segments at our partner, TVJax.com. Next on Diane Rehm, in recent years, recruits to the Islamic State have carried out atrocities across Syria and Iraq and around the world, most recently in Brussels. The history of ISIS and how its rise may shape the future of the Middle East. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.